You're listening to episode 10 of the Book Thingo podcast, featuring lively discussions about romance books, culture, and the lack of spoons in the United States of America. This episode features Book Thingo bloggers talking about the 2016 Romantic Times Convention. Book Thingo would like to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land on which this episode was recorded, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We also acknowledge the contributions of Aboriginal Australians to our shared literary heritage.
Welcome to the Book Thingo podcast, talking about books we love, especially romance. Kill a fairy fast on the Book Thingo podcast.
Welcome back to the Book Thingo podcast. I'm Kat Mayer from bookthingo.com.au, an Aussie blog for romance readers. Today's episode is a bit different from our usual interview. I'm super chuffed to introduce you to two of my co-bloggers at Book Thingo, Rudy, whose name you might be familiar with because she's the audio producer for our podcast, and Gabby, who you might also be familiar with because she wrote an open letter to the Sydney Writers Festival a couple of years ago, and it remains one of the most talked about opinion pieces on Book Thingo. Last month, Rudy, Gabby and I attended the Romantic Times Convention in Las Vegas. It was my first ever RT convention, and it was Rudy and Gabby's second. And even though technically what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, we thought it would be interesting to do a kind of debrief about our experiences at the convention. You can find information on all the authors and books we talk about in this episode by going to bookthingo.com.au/podcast and clicking on episode number 10. The audio for this podcast was produced by Rudy Bremer, who is very happy today because there will be no aircraft noise whatsoever.
Amazing.
Oh my God, I am so happy.
It's so clean.
I can tell you're like, I am in control of this domain.
Oh my God, watch me like raise and lower people's levels as well.
Oh my God.
Fancy.
Yes. Orgasmic. Audio orgasms.
Audio orgasms. Ew.
Okay, are we
Look,
starting?
I don't make fun of your kings. Why are you going to mention that?
Touché.
So, what did you guys expect going to the RT convention?
I had pretty high expectations, I'm not going to lie. New Orleans was so amazing. I had pretty high expectations. I thought I would have the same level of thrill that I had that first time.
I think, yeah, like I was expecting to hit the ground running, and for some reason I didn't. And yep. I don't know whether that was my expectations kind of getting in the way of it, or because Vegas, it was just so big and spread out, and it felt a bit more disconnected. But then also, like last time when we were in New Orleans, we went to the Blogger Symposium, yeah. And that's almost like a built-in sort of friendship base.
Yeah.
And we didn't do that, but you did, Kat.
I was, but the problem was it took about 45 minutes to check in, so I was half an hour late for the Blogger Symposium. So, and I ended up sitting next to the other Aussies who were there. So it was great in terms of meeting new people, but I don't think I got as much out of it as I could have if I'd been there the whole day. Do you think the venue had anything to do with missed expectations this year?
100%.
Oh, so much.
The venue, the Rio was just this smoke-filled hellhole almost. Like, it was so suffocating not being able to see the sun, and I think it really disoriented me. The fact that there were no windows, like going out to the pool, those 2 days that we went out to the pool, that was actually such a like a literal breath of fresh air because there was so much cigarette smoke every time you had to walk to the convention. And the walk was so long, you felt asthmatic.
But that's actually really interesting because in New Orleans, you didn't stay in the hotel, did you?
No.
You still had to.
Like, we were walking, like, 10 minutes to get to... Because we were on a different block, let alone, like, because there was... That was so big that they had to have a second hotel, which was across the road. And even that had filled up by the time we had booked. Because poor students and we didn't have the money
immediately. Budget hotels. That's all we did.
So we were like a block down the road and we still probably walked about the same distance by being in the conference.
I heard
hotel.
Some people talking about the fact that there was nowhere central for people to kind of just accidentally congregate.
There was no lobby. In New Orleans, there was a very obvious lobby with a bar, and that bar had snacks and it was very kind of, you had to go through the lobby to get, or go through the bar to get up to all the conference.
To get out.
Yeah.
And so, like, people were kind of hanging out there, whereas there was sort of a bar in the middle of the casino, which meant that... But
I think also it's the poker machines. And I don't know whether it's just us, because in Australia there's this love-hate relationship with poker machines, and it always reminds me of kind of an RSL club.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And the fact that you can't actually escape the poker machines. Like, if you want to sit at the bar, there's a poker machine in front of you. That was so, so strange. I didn't know how to deal with it.
So now that we've whinged about the venue and how far everything was, were there particular authors that you were looking to meet, and did you get a chance to meet them?
Oh my God. I very definitely embarrass myself in front of every author I wanted to meet.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
classic.
Like, above and beyond. Like, I tried really hard to be subtle because I don't trust myself in front of people that I've... People like Alicia Rye, for instance. Like, I adore her. I follow her on Twitter. I talk about her obsessively, despite the fact until this, like, trip, I'd never met her. No, that's a lie. I met her in New Orleans.
Did okay. You really?
Yeah, I did. That's actually...
When did you meet her?
I went to her panel on diversity and romance in New Orleans.
Oh.
And I had read her, like, Persephone and Hades erotica thing. So I recognized her name and I went along to the panel, and that was pretty much where the obsession started. And then I followed her, and yeah, so I kind of knew that I was going to be a weirdo.
Well, that's always good, as long as you can preface it.
I did that.
So, yeah. But with that in mind, I decided to just sort of limit my contact with her. So, like, I stalked her.
But
that's basically what ended up happening.
Yeah, from a distance, like gentle stalking.
Yeah. So, you know, the kind where she probably wasn't aware of it for the first 2 days.
Oh, that's so terrifying. That's so
She's good. Aware of it
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Didn't we do the same thing with Victoria Dahl when she's walking into the hotel?
But I feel like that's different, because we shared a drink with her. We like went
no,
to the
pub.
No,
but the way we did it.
We're like friends.
I felt so bad. Friend. No, she tweeted later. She's like, oh, I was trying to sneak in and then got ambushed on the way. And I
well,
was like,
I took it as a nice tweet and you took it as a stalkerish, like, getaway from
me. I did, because I respect people's personal space. I don't know about you guys.
Okay, but I had a strategy for RT because this was my first RT, and I knew that I probably won't go to another one for a very long time. It was like no holds barred. So if I wanted to see someone, I would just like
screw
jump
it.
In front
You're
of
going
them.
For it.
Right.
Yeah, see, I think I was different this year. I think for some reason I was so much more restrained, and I was so aware of my presence as a fan with authors that I really admired. And it wasn't so much that I was looking forward to meeting anyone new or like meeting anyone that I was a fan of before. So I knew people that I liked to read their books. I knew they were going to be there, but I wasn't really keen to jump on them and say, hey, I'm a real big fan of your book. I felt really awkward about that this year. But there were authors that I found out about at the conference that I kind of developed this weird fascination with, and this kind of slight obsession. Alicia Rye was one of them, but it was all those authors who happened to be on the diversity panels, like Rebecca Weatherspoon and
mine was Alyssa Cole and Rebecca.
Alyssa Cole, oh my God. Anyway, they were all, I was just kind of listening to them, and I just had praise hands the entire time, like, you know, praise hands emojis. Like, that's where I felt, that's what I felt my face was and everything was. I was so amazed and just taken up with what they were saying and how incredible it was.
I feel like I was, yeah, I definitely had the same, especially for their panels. Mm. And I, part of my stalking of Alicia Wright did include consistently going to the panels of Rebecca Weatherspoon, Alicia Wright, Alyssa Cole, Zoe Archer did really great panels as well.
She moderated that, was it the subversive...
It was the first feminist one.
Feminist panel on romance as a subversive text, I think it was. Mm. That was really well moderated, I thought.
Yeah, that was good.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So I felt that almost every panel I went to seemed to be a diversity panel. And I don't know whether it's because everything else sounded uninteresting and I didn't turn up, or they were all too early and I was still in bed. But I think I went to 3 diversity panels and they were all quite different, actually, and very interesting.
The diversity panels were ones that I attended to, and I loved every single one of them. I also tried to attend a lot of the LGBTQ ones, and a couple of them were really, really great. But then I went to one and it was horrendous. I left feeling truly terrible inside, and really terrible that I hadn't said anything or made my opinion known. I felt quite silenced in that panel, and it was moderated by a Riptide publishing person, and it had a few authors who, one author in particular, who's currently being spoken about amongst diversity or people who advocate for diversity in romance. She was on the panel, and a couple of other authors, and it was a predominantly white panel, or actually it was all white, and they used the word ghetto about 40 times, I'd say, and they used this word ghetto as a kind of positive thing, or like, if the ghetto keeps you safe, then you can stay in the ghetto, as in LGBT romance, like to say that you are marginalized and to say that you are oppressed within a genre, a wider genre, then yeah, totally. Allow yourself to be oppressed. Allow yourself to be silenced. Allow yourself to be that kind of minority, because, you know, at the moment, everyone's for LGBTQ and everyone's for all rights, and, you know, we're moving forward and it's all great and amazing. And to some extent, I knew what that they were trying to say, but the fact that they were completely dismissing the experiences of non-white LGBTQ people, or people who don't have that kind of privileged upbringing of having a positive queer experience when they come out, they said that, oh, we don't necessarily need coming out stories because we're past that. And okay, yeah, there are more stories to queer romance than coming out, but coming out stories are still really, really important because there are still so many people who are struggling with coming out because of family issues, because of wider societal issues. You know, we don't have marriage equality here in Australia, so you can't just say that we're so progressive and, you know, accepting when we're not. And yeah, the whole room was being whipped into this furor about moving past being a marginalized, oppressed group. And obviously, that's a good thing, but we can't move past it because there are still marginalized queer people in the world.
And there's nothing to say that you can't find romance within that. Like Alyssa Cole, because, you know, let's turn this entire podcast.
One more time.
That's okay. I was going to quote her too.
Look, like, well, like this morning, literally this morning, I started reading Let It Shine, which is her novella that's about the civil rights movement in the US in the 60s, the Freedom Rides. And like I'm about 20 pages in and I was nearly crying on the train, but I trust her as an author to get me to a happy ending. Like, you know, like that's,
but well, that's, she's been
able,
that.
Yeah, like she's able to take something that is quite a disturbing and upsetting part of our society, and yeah, it's history, but it's living history.
Yeah.
Find a way to bring a positive story out of it, and it's like,
but also the other thing about diversity is, just because you want diversity doesn't mean that you can't keep the stuff that's already there. So to say that coming out stories are kind of have been done so many times before and are no longer as important, like the point of diversity isn't to set aside those issues. It's to say they're issues, but there are other ones, and we can talk about those other ones as well. We don't have to devalue what's already out there. And I think that came out in one of the diversity panels that we went to. I think it was Alyssa Cole that said, you know, you can write white characters. Like, no one's saying you shouldn't. We're just saying that there are other types of characters that should be in romance, that we want to find in romance.
I know. I love this idea that's sort of starting to come through with people who are, I don't know, scared of writing diverse romances, as though there's like a hegemony of diversity, like there's only one way to be diverse, and if you don't know how to do it, you can't write.
Well,
it.
Well, that's
so
interesting
can't
to me, right? Because, like, I've kind of stepped back from the diversity discussions because I'm kind of conflicted about it. And my view is, if you're a white author writing diverse characters, you just really have to be prepared for someone to say you got it wrong, 100%. Even if you think that you got it right, even if you have friends who beta read you, even if it's based on an actual person. It's not going to be everybody's experience, what you're writing on the page. And I think part of being an advocate for diversity is being humble enough to say, look, this is the best that I could do with the writing. And really, that's all anyone's asking for. And the fact that we're talking about problems in romances that feature people of color or people who identify with different types of genders and sexualities, I think that's a healthy discussion. But I think what we need to remember is just not to get so defensive all the time that you can say, yeah, I wrote it. I acknowledge that somebody has a problem with it because it's not their experience, but you know, you do the best you can.
And that's what's happening now. I think it's this this way authors aren't understanding how to learn from their mistakes, because I think there's still this idea that a book is their baby, and if you critique that baby, then how dare you? Oh my God, you've hurt my baby. But no, a book is a book. A book is not this static thing. A book is a text that is read by many different people who bring their own meaning to it and who bring their own understanding, and you have to take that on board. That might not mean including it in every single book that you write every time after, but it means learning from those experiences.
And also just thinking about what your default is. So if your default is always, you know, Titian head, violet eyed,
our favorite types of heroines,
then maybe just ask yourself one day why you keep writing the same type of, or even the minor characters, you know, why do they all have to be a certain type of person? And I think that's just where it begins. And even I think, if you're a person of color who writes romance, it's really hard to break out of the conventions of romance that feature predominantly white characters. So even when you have personal experiences to draw on, it's not a given that you'll satisfy everybody. Yeah. So moving on from the panels, did you go to any of the social events in RT? I know there was like the casino night, there was a cover model contest, there was the Avon Historical, there was Heather Graham's spectacular show.
Did you go?
There was the awards night.
I really wanted to, and I had no one to go with.
Yeah, because I ditched you. I was like, no, I'm not doing this. I promised myself I would not go again this year, because for Nola, I was roaring drunk for it, and it made it bearable, but it did not happen this year, and I refused to be trapped in a room.
I don't know what you're talking about, Gabby.
It was terrible.
It is always delightful.
Yeah, social events. I think I went to the Avon Historical, as always, because that is insanely fun, and you get free food, free drinks, and a hell of a lot of free books.
Okay, so there were two events from Avon. One was the Avon Historical event, and the other one was the actual Avon publisher spotlight with author signing everywhere. I think they were two different events.
Were
one
they?
Had cover
yeah,
models where you could take photos with
oh,
them.
Oh, then I didn't go to that one.
And then the other one was just
you went
free books.
To the cover model
well,
one,
I did
and
it.
You looked
well,
great. You
actually,
looked amazing. She should upload it. Everyone forced her to upload it.
It was on
so
Instagram,
beautiful.
But actually I got there like 10 minutes after it was over. Because that was basically me the entire
so
conference.
You are so bad at being on time.
Okay, first of all, RT tip for anyone who's going. For those breakfasts, you just turn up 10 minutes before it's over and the food is still out there.
And you don't have to listen to any of the speeches.
It's not that I didn't want to listen, but I wanted to sleep in for an extra like hour and a half or whatever it was.
Well, you needed that hour and a half to walk from your room.
It's true. It's so true.
Screwed up my time management so bad, and it's already bad enough
oh,
as it is.
Because you have time management.
She does.
Sure.
She definitely does. I'm surprised you turn up on time today.
I'm surprised you're here.
So Nightline did a feature on RT and they focused on the cover model contest. I think that was part of was that part of Casino Night? Or was that part of Hot
no,
Cover Model?
No, that was the cover model competition. Because Casino Night, and this was the thing, okay? Like, you kept going on about how, oh, I heard that the dancing at the thing was so bad.
Did I get them
you
mixed
were
up?
Yeah, you were Sorry. Talking about two different things.
But the cover
one,
model dancing was pretty bad too. I saw
I'm
it
sure,
on Nightline.
I'm sure it was. I haven't bothered to look at
no,
it.
No, I really
time.
Have to see it.
They went to a thing that is like 98% female attendance, and they focused on the 2% of men that were there.
But how standard
who
is that?
Were there to be pretty.
How are we like, surprised by this? And I know it's heartbreaking, but dear God, I am zero surprised that they can do this. They do this with our genre. They do this with everything. Like, oh,
even
Graham Simpson wrote
fantasy.
This amazing book. And he did. Graham Simpson wrote a really incredible book, but it's a romance novel. And he was lauded for it, and it was really spoken about in Australia. But look at all the other Australian female authors that have been doing that for so long. Same with John Green and YA. You have female authors who are revolutionising YA, sure. And yet it's John Green that gets the pat on the back and said, oh my God, how do you understand teens so well? Like,
Look at how you've reinvigorated YA. It was.
It didn't need reinvigorating.
It's doing pretty well without John Green. Like, not going to lie, it's been going for a while.
Yeah. And it's funny because you said that it wasn't, because I actually didn't read the article, but it wasn't a totally negative slam of the entire thing, was it? Was it kind of semi-positive?
The feature was very, well, I didn't think it was all that positive. I thought it was just what you would expect.
Okay.
The interviewer was an old white man. He interviewed a few women. Most of them didn't give unexpected answers. Let's put it that way.
Because we kept walking, like we were walking around, we kept coming across like film crews that were.
No, I think that was Sylvia Days.
Was that just Sylvia Days?
That was different. She wasn't. Yeah. She actually does.
So let's just take a break and talk about Sylvia Day. I saw Sylvia Day advertising in the New York subway.
Yeah.
And there was a postcard in one of the swag bags about a lifestyle website for Sylvia Day.
No.
Like she's like the Gwyneth of romance. So I haven't looked at it yet,
like
but I'm going to go
Gwyneth. You made Gwyneth Paltrow sound so much fancier with Gwyneth.
I wasn't sure who
that's how
Gwyneth
I say
was.
Her name. Oh my I God. Like, I don't know. English isn't my first language. Diversity in podcasting.
I'm sorry. Don't cut. Do what? Because you were getting so cut throughout the entire of your trip over people not recognising your Australian accent.
Yeah.
That was so very Australian.
But now she's not Australian when it matters.
No, but don't pick on the way that I say Gwyneth.
Terrible.
Oh, I don't know Gwyneth why she Paltrow, has to have such a so bloody complicated
she's
name.
The
anyway.
Worst. It's not complicated at all. You've made it complicated, but she's the worst.
Anyway.
Moving on.
Sylvia Day is Gwyneth Paltrow of the romance world.
Yeah. I think so.
And
but I feel like that's a bit of a disadvantage for fans because you can't really approach her when there's film crews everywhere. Like it's a bit more intimidating.
Maybe that's the point.
Maybe they didn't even have film in the camera. It was just
maybe next time.
E.L. James was there though.
Oh my god, she was. Yes.
E.L. James was there.
And we have an excellent story about. Yeah, we met this blogger called Leah.
Yes,
she's like the most
Leah's amazing
person. Her husband like builds bookcases for her and reads aloud steamy scenes from the book. It's like...
I guess porn? Like as...
Not well.
As foreplay?
No, I think kind of as a joke, but when you hear it...
No,
it's like,
okay, my favourite thing about their relationship is that when she really loves a book, she'll send him, like, he has to read it. And he will. And he'll send her, like, photos of his reactions to the thing that happens in the book because... He needs her to know how he's feeling about
That's
it.
That's so cute.
They're
Not
adorable.
Not just that. Her blog was a present from him.
That's so darn cute.
Yeah. So anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, so
E.L.
anyway.
James, please.
And it has to do with the other Australians because apparently she was in line for some event.
She lined up?
Yeah, I never lined up.
She's
so this
beyond.
So she was lined up with Adele and Claire who are from Melbourne. And then they were like, sorry, we're not doing this anymore. This is like taking so too long. So she ended up on her own going in. And I think she got a bit anxious because it was just, there were so many people, the room was so big. And so she kind of just went in the corner and was panicking a little bit. And suddenly this lady comes up to her and says, you know, are you okay? And tries to comfort her. And she's like, yeah, yeah. And then when she looked up, she's like, oh my God. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So she had a personal experience with E.L. James. Yep. Speaking of E.L. James, we went to see the 50 Shades of Grey musical
praise. Parody. Be so to the creators good. Of that show. That was so hilarious.
Because when we bought the tickets, we didn't really know what to expect.
We expected it to be trash. Either they were going to slander the genre or make fun of the women who like the books.
Who like the books.
And they did neither. It was literally them making fun of the book itself, which I am really in support of because
I'm down with that.
There are issues with the book. We all know that we all have issues with that book. It is not the best representation of erotica. But, oh my God.
Even, like, they don't even make fun, really, of the BDSM. It's
no.
Just,
they're making
like,
fun
it's
of,
the
like,
characterization.
The, actual, like, the characterizations and the tropes.
And how sexy
and
was Christian Grey.
It was so
executed.
The best Christian Grey.
The best Christian Grey.
Only time
Grey.
I've ever liked Christian Grey.
Yeah. Do you know what I think I've realized, though? I think when people play, what's her name again? It's not Bella because that's Twilight.
Anastasia.
When people play her either in the movie or on stage, like I just end up liking her a billion times more because I loved Anastasia Steele in the movie. I thought she was hilarious and cute and adorable. Loved that she had hair everywhere. Super down for that.
Can I just say, speaking of hair, this podcast, we like to segue into like a new topic even though we haven't finished. I overheard people, I can't even remember where, it might have been RT, but it might not have been, talking about the movie and the fact that Anna had hair, pubic hair, and that they found that unseemly. And I was like, is that an American thing?
I do not have time for that.
But, like, doesn't everyone have pubic hair normally?
Oh, weird. But like to manicure. One,
it's canon. She's supposed to have pubic hair. Two, what is wrong with pubic hair?
I don't know.
But it's the same thing with female body hair. They were
supportive of the leg hair.
They liked the leg hair.
Yeah, but they didn't. I think,
so it's okay to have hair, like, as long as it doesn't exceed past your thigh?
I don't know, but
yeah,
like,
because
what is
you
that?
Need to get rid of that immediately.
Like, well, an allowed hair between, think, like, your neck and your thighs. But I'm pretty sure that's,
I mean, the
rule.
Impression I got was that they felt that she hadn't groomed herself properly, but I was like, that's off.
No romance heroines groom themselves, except maybe in contemporary when they're, like, super sexy and in control of their lives. Like, that's when they groom their pubic hair. But usually the virgins, they have a full bush.
Nice. Yeah.
Nothing more to say on that one.
So did you go to the RT Book Fair? Was that very different from New Orleans?
Oh, I didn't go.
That was the big signing. Okay, you guys told me you were going to line up at 7 a.m.
No, Rudy did. I didn't. Rudy did.
So I got there an hour after it started, and it was fantastic. No lines, no queues, nothing.
See, I don't think it would have been like it. I don't think it would have been like that at NOLA, and I think because NOLA had a lot of bigger names, like E.L. James was actually signing. You had authors who were really, really big, who have really huge followings. Whereas I think there are a lot of authors there, which kind of made the spread a little more kind of even.
Well, the other thing is that they actually, apparently it started last year, they've introduced a new system, and it had to do with, like, the books that you brought with you. And that's what made it easier, because there was a book check, and so you, if you were someone who had, like, a ridiculous number of books because you live in America and you didn't have to worry about, like, the weight of your bags.
Or book prices are super
cheap. Prices. You know, you were able to bring 50 books with you, and then you just put them in the book check and then, like, brought them out. Like, I think it was, like, 10 at a time. That wasn't a thing when we were in New Orleans. That only got introduced last year in Dallas. And it changed the way that it's, like, that the book fair runs.
Do you
now
think the room was, like, bigger as well? Because I heard
that was the other thing. It was so much bigger that you actually could almost breathe in there.
I think that was better for readers because I didn't feel like that it was claustrophobic. But I don't know that the authors enjoyed it as much, because if you're an author and you have no line in front of you, it's kind of sad.
I think it was like that in NOLA though. Seriously, there were people without lines, and it was just like, I'm so sorry, I'm just going over here. Nalini's over there. I'm so sorry.
Well, that's the great thing about
making eye contact with you, but I really don't want your book.
Yeah.
The setup in Vegas was great for that, because you could just power past and not have to meet people's eyes, even though I know that was really mean. So of the authors that you met, aside from the ones that we've already fangirled over, which ones were your not-to-be-missed authors for RT this year?
Okay, so for me, it was like, it was Alicia, Rebecca Weatherspoon, Alyssa Cole, Tessa Dare. I adore her. And, like,
she did a podcast.
She spoke to me as though we knew each other at one point, and it took me ages to work out why. And it's because, like, the day before I had tweeted something, like, I'd been live tweeting her panel, and I said something about, like, her, I don't know, like, explaining the mating habits of lobsters, and the whole room was like, oh, isn't that sweet? Which, in context of her new book, it actually makes sense.
Okay.
So then, like, but she had retweeted that because she follows me. Yeah, that's right. and then, like, that afternoon was a book thing. And so she saw me and she's like, oh, hey. I was like, we don't know each other.
We're failing to mention Susan Elizabeth Phillips.
I met her.
Yeah, so okay, so did I, Kat. Pipe down. I was gonna talk talk about my experience with SCP. So I have a really conflicting relationship with SCP. I loved her contemporaries. I loved the Chicago Stars. But then when I started to become more aware of issues in the world, there are some issues in her books which are a little bit upsetting to read about. Like there's a kind of subtle misogyny, a lot of fat shaming in her book. Yeah, so I was in line and I was like, I hate doing this. I hate going up to authors who I might not like their books or I think it's problematic. But like there is some element of me that is so enamored with the Chicago Stars and how she made me fall in love with sports romance. So I lined up for a book and I got Heroes Are My Weakness and I got it signed and I called my sister who is another fan and I was like, oh my God, I just met SCP. And she started yelling at me. She was so pissed off that I hadn't got her a book.
Oh yeah, you were in front of me, like five people in front of me.
So I called and I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Because she's like, I got you a signed Paulina Simon's book when you were in Berlin. And I felt very guilty. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'll line back up for you. So I line back up and I'm still talking to her because we haven't spoken in a while and I'm talking and then I get up to the front and I'm like, oh, listen, I just got a book. Please, would you mind signing another one for my sister because she's going to kill me? And she's like, is she on the phone right now? I'm like, yeah, she's on the phone. She's like, give it to me. And then she had a 5-minute conversation with my sister.
I saw that. I was like, oh, that is so sweet.
It was so nice. It was so, so nice.
She signed two books for me as well, and they weren't even for me. They were for two of my friends.
So sweet. Like them. That was a cool piece of work.
So can I tell you my list?
Do not care who you like.
Well, so I'm going to tell you anyway. So I tweet stalked Mel Jean Brooke, and she's like, oh, I've got my hair up today. And then someone said, oh, she's like a really tall redhead. So literally that whole day I was looking around for a tall redhead with a bun. So I, of course, did not find her in this manner.
That's pretty vague. It's a pretty vague description.
So that evening I was in the central bar in the middle of the poker machines with Para Junkie and Kindle Joe. And we're just having drinks. And suddenly Nalini turns up with Mel Jean. And I was like, I'm having drinks with Mel Jean Brooke. And then Nalini was there, but we have met Nalini Singh a few times, and not to say she's not awesome because she always is, but it's like usually when we see her in RWA in Australia or the ARA convention, they're really small, so you get like plenty of time to talk to her. But the others with me, I don't know that they'd ever met her, so they were really super thrilled to just have them there sitting down. So thank you, Nalini Singh.
We mentioned that about Nalini though. We said Nalini is always just around and makes herself so accessible and you feel comfortable talking to her even though she's this insanely famous author and insanely incredible person. You just feel like, I don't know, there's not this huge divide between
us. I didn't realize how unusual that was until I met more authors and realized that it's actually really awkward to talk to complete strangers who think they know more about your life than they really do.
Yeah, that's something that I think that you deal with a lot, like even with our favorite authors that we've been talking about this time. It's like, oh, you want to, it's really hard because you admire their work so much and you admire what they're saying so much, but you also just want to be their pal. And I think, how do you bridge, like, is it possible or is that stupid?
Well, we could do like what we did with Victoria Darling, go, hey, are you still awake? Come down to the bar with us.
Oh my God. That's like, okay. So like actual conference highlights for me was the fact that
she was such a great sport.
Bugged
though.
Her to the, like,
I wanted to hug her.
We definitely sort of like went over the boundaries of what is normally acceptable. But she acted like that was perfectly fine and that we weren't horribly intrusive. Like that we made her come down from her room when she'd very definitely was done for the day to come and have drinks with us and chat. In the not bar.
This is why romance, I think, is a bit of an amazing community, but a bit of a weird one at the same time, because we have so many interactions with our authors, because authors either used to be readers or used to be bloggers or just are present in that online community. You just don't know what that relationship is sometimes. And I think that's where people get caught up when authors get caught up when responding to reviews sometimes, and there's this kind of, there's this weird symbiotic relationship that is.
Yeah, because I feel like I'm friends with certain authors because I know their work and I know what's going on in their life, and like they have the capacity to know what's going on in mine if they happen to follow my, hardly any follow, but that's fine.
Except Tessa Dare. She
you
may
know.
Really
you might have authors who stalk you.
But like, it's not like they're familiar with my work, like my actual job. Maybe they've read a review, but
maybe
like
they'll listen to this podcast. Yeah, we'll tag them all on Twitter. No, except the ones.
No,
except for the people
certain
that we've defamed.
Certain ones
already.
That we've defamed.
So we're running out of time. One final question: are you planning to go to Atlanta or to another RT in the near future?
I can't afford to go to Atlanta next year.
Yeah, I'm definitely, I can't afford it. But I actually don't think that I would go, to be completely honest. I think I need to, I want to be at a more critical convention as opposed to one that is really great for meeting authors. But I want to kind of talk about romance a lot more critically and from maybe a more academic point of view.
I'm the same. And I think the only time I would go again is if they had authors that I really, 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 really
like Jude Devereaux
to see.
Or Judith McNaught. I'd
Mine
go for the old school.
Patricia Briggs, Laura Kinsale. Yeah. Laura Kinsale.
Oh, if Laura Kinsale was there,
tickets.
I would actually sleep on the streets for her. Like, I would.
I didn't even do that for Hamilton, so I'm not sure.
Ah, that's because you're not a real fan of Hamilton.
Can I ask one question?
Yep.
Pro tips. For someone who, like, if you're new and you want to go to RT for the first time, what do you need to know?
Be open to meeting people at panels. Like, be open and talk to other people and establish those relationships and learn where people are coming from so that you can kind of get a perspective that's different to your own, kind of visit panels that maybe you wouldn't normally visit.
Stay like at the conference hotel.
Unless it's the Rio.
If you're new to RT and know nobody else, line up to the events because you make a lot of friends in the line because there is literally nothing else to do but talk to other people.
That's it.
What would you say?
I would say, like, plan your day. Plan breaks in your day because it is tiring.
The like, no lunch break thing. Sorry.
You know what? In Australia, we have lunch breaks where they actually provide lunch and morning tea and afternoon tea. It is
it's
just
almost
uncivilized
heaven.
Not
it's
to have
heaven.
A meal in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
It's very unsettling that there's no morning tea.
I think we also have tea service. Like, I feel like, don't we have tea
there? Yeah, we definitely
there?
Do.
Like, just available throughout the day?
Yeah.
Accessible tea.
And spoons.
God, we couldn't even eat our cornflakes because we couldn't find free spoons.
Because we thought, will we buy disposable spoons at the supermarket? No,
no
we don't
we'll
need
find
to.
It.
We'll
there's
find
Starbucks.
Some because
there's
so many places. America, what have you got against spoons?
It's probably because people steal their spoons.
Please get over
cornflakes.
It. Do you Oops. Know what? Necessary.
No regret.
Unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. Thanks to Rudy and Gabby for joining me this episode and for making my first RT convention such a memorable one. I'll include links to all the books and authors we mentioned today on the blog. You can find them by going to bookthingo.com.au/podcast and clicking on episode 10. If you have any feedback or suggestions, you can send me a tweet at bookthingo, or if 140 characters aren't enough, send an email. You can also visit the blog to check out reviews and opinions from a bunch of readers from down under, including Rudy and Gabby. In the next podcast episode, I'll be chatting with none other than Graham Simsion, author of The Rosie Project, which has become a bit of a worldwide phenomenon. That'll be up in a couple of weeks. Also, while I was at RT, I recorded a bunch of podcasts with authors, bloggers, and romance advocates. Rudy and I are furiously working towards getting these ready for you, so look out for those in the coming months. Until then, I hope you have a fabulous fortnight of reading.